like to welcome everyone back to the Duck Pond Wall. I'm your host, Monica Hull, the Alumni Director at Emory & Henry. And the Duck Pond Wall is a show here on WEHC where we kind of pretend we're sitting on the Duck Pond Wall and catching up on the news, right?
Yeah.
And my guest today is Major Warner, class of 1991. How you doing, Major?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I'm going to visualize that.
Are you?
Yeah.
Did you ever sit on the Duck Pond Wall?
Yes. I've stood on it. I've sat on it.
Did you dance on it?
I danced on it. Leon and I danced on it our first year on campus.
Okay, now talk about visualizing something.
Yeah. They had a big block. They had a block party for us outside the cafeteria there.
And you danced on it?
Danced on it. Leon and I danced on it.
What was the song? Do you remember?
It was a Kid and Play song. I don't know that I remember exactly what it was, but we danced on it.
That is awesome. I really kind of love that.
The same number. Like, we were, like, really in unison, unrehearsed, everything.
And is that when you knew that you were going to be lifelong friends?
Because you
knew each other's moves.
Yeah. Still do.
Well, I'm speaking with Major today on Thursday, March 21. This is our founding day here at Emory & Henry, and he just got a big old award this morning, and we're very excited about that. Every year, the Emory & Henry Alumni Association chooses 4 alumni to highlight their story and tell about what they've been doing and give them an award. And our distinguished alumni honoree this year is Major Warner. And so congratulations first.
Thank you, Monica. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I've been called a lot of things in my lifetime. So distinguished is a new one.
Well, I think it's the right thing.
I'm honored.
I think it's the right thing. Well, and I'm so excited this year because, you know, we've been honoring people who are not really close to campus. And so this year, so sometimes it's hard for honorees to get here.
Right.
This year, all 4 of you were from far, far away, and you all got here today.
Yes.
I'm so grateful for that.
Yeah. Well, thank you. We just rearranged our schedule. For whatever reason, it felt right to be here.
Yeah.
It was special. So I can't speak for Chuck and the others. But I know for me, I just said, you know what, I've just got to rearrange my schedule and make it happen. Came down late last night and went ahead back here in just a little bit.
So
it's been an exciting day.
Well, and part of what has been great is having a chance for all 4 of you have agreed to speak to student classes today, which has been wonderful. I got to sit in a little bit. You got to speak to an education class this morning.
I did.
Tell me a little bit about what that conversation was. What kind of questions did they ask you?
It was an assessment for learning class. So all of those kids, the range, PE teachers, there's math teacher, most of them are elementary background folks who aspire to be elementary teachers. But we started off just talking about what it means to be student-centered and how do we do that.
Mm-hmm.
As educators, how do we put students at the center of learning and how difficult it is to relinquish control?
Yeah.
So that's kind of how it started, and then they just kind of started asking some questions, and then the conversation evolved into the relationship side of teaching and learning and, you know, how to be successful and advice. And then that just turned into me sharing some stories. And I think there's a place for humor in everything, so just trying to model for them how to kind of remove barriers when, you know, you get introduced to a group of kids for the first time.
Yeah.
You know, how do we tear down the discomfort in the room and, you know, chuckle a little bit and get to know each other a little bit? So it evolved into a conversation about my journey, their journey, you know, advice and support. So it was great. We'd probably still be there. You know, it's one of those things where it could have just gone on all day. And I told Sandy, I said, it's kudos to her. We've created a culture at Emory where education and the career still matters.
Mm.
It really does. I told my wife at lunch that there are places in the Commonwealth where being a teacher is still a valued career.
Yeah. Is that getting to be a more difficult sale?
I think it is, but I also think it's regional. I think, and I shared this with the kids this morning, I said the more closely you get to your sort of your densely populated areas, the more political things get. So, you know, really take your time and kind of look around. All those kids will get dozens of offers to teach. In fact, I joked, I've got a contract for every one of them now.
I love that.
And they were like, are you serious? I was like, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
What a great networking moment for
absolutely.
Them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's important. So, you know, they've got to navigate, you know, certainly the changing landscape, but there are places, lots of places, I believe, where education is still a valued career. And to be impactful, that's a calling.
Yeah.
You've got to be called to that work.
Well, and I think I said you're the superintendent of Fauquier Public Schools, but let me just say that to make sure that I've said it. Superintendent of Schools in Fauquier County. You know, you've done a lot of work in education. You've been a school counselor, you've been a teacher, you've been an assistant principal, you've been a principal. Is being superintendent an entirely different set of challenges, or does it feel kind of familiar based on your experiences?
It's a completely different set of challenges. I spend a lot of time with what I say is the 10 to 15% of the craziness that's in our profession. So when things, you know, it's budget, it's politics, it's I deal in adult problems all the time. Mm. So it's a completely different view of from being a principal. 180.
Interesting.
Completely
different. Because there it's mostly student problems.
Yeah, yeah, you're in the trenches. You're doing the day-to-day work with kids, supporting teachers, supporting kids, helping them navigate life.
Yeah.
As a superintendent, you are more removed from that center. So, you know, the ripple effect takes a little bit longer. We make policy decisions all the time that oftentimes won't show up in impact until months down the road. And so you've got to get comfortable being in a lonelier space.
Hmm.
And you have to make yourself get into schools, get into classrooms so that you can stay connected.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you'll just drive yourself crazy. I love every element of the job. All of the good stuff, all the bad stuff. And call me crazy.
Okay, that sounds crazy.
And a lot of people would say that's true. But it's when you're called to work, like when you feel at your core that what you're doing is what you're supposed to be doing, then you're so deeply connected to it that even the tough days are just the next challenge that you kind of have to get through.
Wow.
And Coach Johnson instilled that in us decades ago that, you know, that when the tough kind of gets on you, you know, what are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to run and hide?
Right.
You're going to roll up your sleeves and figure out how to kind of, and he forced us to do that, forced us out of our comfort zone. So I see all kinds of things and you just deal with it.
Since you're mentioning Coach Johnson, just in case people don't know, that's Coach Bob Johnson, who coached basketball at Emory Henry for a very long time. It was certainly one of our most successful coaches here. And Major is also, in addition to being an awesome educator, is also a member of the Sports Hall of Fame. It was on a really neat team.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That was a great bunch of guys.
Yeah, awesome, special. And the 1987-88 team, the Sweet 16 team, was tremendously awesome. Like, I don't even know if that's a phrase, but it should be. We just made it.
Yeah.
They were awesome. But that 4 years, those guys are still lifelong friends.
Right.
You know, these years later, 30 plus years later.
So. I have enjoyed seeing you all stay close over the years. I think that's right.
And we haven't had to work at it either. It's been organic.
Yeah.
And this place did it.
You know. Well, you know, there's something to be said for a small environment where you really sort of have to spend time with each other.
Yeah. You're one of my favorite people, too, so let me just say that for the record.
Oh, ditto. You've already made me cry twice today. Don't go again. So you say that getting back in the classroom sort of sounds like it kind of grounds you a little bit.
It does.
Do you miss the teaching element?
I just miss being around kids day to day.
Got it.
One of the kids asked me in class this morning, is there a favorite grade level of kids? And I said, well, I've spent almost my entire career dealing with high school kids because they were just a safer bunch to me. Like, you could, at least in your brain, you can rationalize with
them.
You cannot rationalize with an elementary age kid.
No. The stories are good.
They are, and they love you unconditionally.
Yeah.
And I said, I told the story of my kindergarten teacher, Betty Putnam, who's probably at the top of my Mount Rushmore of people that have really, truly altered my trajectory in my life. But I love kindergarten. Kindergarten kids are just, it's the very beginning of their journey. You see all of the freshness and the vulnerability and the need. And they don't really care how bad of a day you're having. Most of the time, they're happy. They hang on you. They stare at you. They accept you for who you are.
Yeah.
Kindergarten teachers are, to me, they are the foundation of all of teaching. So I enjoy those classes probably the most. Anything K-2, really.
Yeah. Well, I love that you remember your kindergarten teacher.
Yeah,
I think that's really sweet.
Yeah.
What school was that?
So that was, it used to be Northwestern Elementary School, and it's now called Thompson Elementary School. But,
okay.
And I'll share, if it's okay, I'll share the story.
Yeah, I wish you would.
So I shared with the kids that I had her in 1974. And when I left there, she was absolutely told me every day I was going to be somebody special, all those things, right? And I'm sure she probably told all the kids that, but I believed it.
Maybe.
I believed it. When I got the job at Kettle Run in 2007, so from 1974 to 2007, so think about that time span, I was in my office and the secretary comes in and says, hey, is there somebody here to see you? So I walk out and it's Mrs. Putnam. And she's got a gift and she's got a card. And so I opened it up and she said, well, I retired recently and I just was going through some things and I found a picture of your kindergarten class.
Oh, my goodness.
And so she gave it to me and on the back of it, she wrote, I always knew you'd be somebody special. That was in 2007. So I told that story to the kids. And then I said, fast forward to 2015,
right.
I get the Principal of the Year Award for the division. And I'm sitting in my office, same school, and a packet shows up. And here comes another card and another gift from Mrs. Putnam, 2015, with another letter that says, I'm so proud of you, always knew you'd be somebody special.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
And so and they were like, wow. And I said, that's not the end of it. And so when I got my job as the deputy superintendent in 2017, here comes another letter, right? Same thing. And so here's somebody that I had in 1974 when I left that classroom, really had no interaction with, again until 2007.
Yeah.
And then again in 2015, and then again in 2017. And so she was there at really every crucial moment of my career just to affirm what she affirmed for me in 1974, and that's that she believed that I would be somebody. So I told that story to them. I said, you know, that's the significance of being a teacher.
Right.
Is that you get to be on somebody's Mount Rushmore if you choose to do that and be that person. Be that person. That's what we challenge people to do and stuff like that. And so, and then she's in memory care now. So I got in touch with her family a few years ago, but the memory care facility that she's in is literally just around the corner from my office. I haven't been by to see her. I don't know that she'll remember me, but at some point,
I bet she will.
Yeah, I'm gonna get by there. But she absolutely made for me at a time. You know, Faulkner hadn't long integrated when I started in 1974.
So. I was gonna say, tell me why she was pivotal for you as a kindergartner.
You know, well, obviously it's my first sort of foray into education, right?
Right.
We grew up impoverished. I mean, we didn't have a lot, and you know, mom and dad did the best that they could, and it was a family of five. But getting to school, it was just a completely different experience.
Right.
And this lady, who was just the nicest lady on the face of the planet, who would hug you every day and tell you you're special. And I don't ever remember her, you know, saying a mean word. So that was, for me, instrumental.
Yeah.
And clearly impactful that I just kind of carried. And I've had a bunch of wonderful teachers over the years.
Sure.
But
that one
reason,
really.
She just, she was just that person.
Yeah. I remember, you remember Coach Wacker's wife, Mayor Wallace.
Mm-hmm.
She was a kindergarten teacher.
Wow. Okay.
And I visited her classroom one time, and she was hugging kids as they came in. And she said, Monica, sometimes I'm the only hug they get
That's
all day.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's it.
So, you know, she understood her role, that what she was to those kids, and it was beautiful to watch.
It sets the stage for everything. At the point of entry in which we spend 6 to 8 hours a day with them.
Right.
They are the first full formal adult experience. And then we have them for 13 years.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Yeah.
So.
Well, what made you want to get into education?
Emory, I started in the admissions office here. When I graduated, you know, I got an economics and business degree with a concentration in management, but I got to that spring, and Joy Dunbar, who was another one of those folks for me, really was going, what are you going to do? And I'm like, I'll interview, get some jobs. I'll go into the business sector. I'll make a pile of money like everybody else. But I really had no job lined up.
Right.
And then a few weeks before graduation, Joy must have said something to Henry Dawson, because Henry called me and said, hey, would you be interested in one of our admissions counselor positions? And I was like, sure. So I went in, did all the interviews. Lois Hicks went through the interview process and hadn't heard anything. So graduation day comes. My car is packed. I'm ready to head back up to the Shenandoah Valley. And Henry taps me on the shoulder after graduation and says, hey, I'd like to offer you a job. And I'm like, are you serious? And he's like, yeah, I'm offering you a job. I said, great. I accepted, didn't even know how much it was.
Oh, my gosh, that's funny.
And so I started in the admissions office here.
Right.
you know, traveling, recruiting for the college, loved every second of it, in and out of high schools, working with kids. And that's where my passion for working with kids was ignited, was working through the admissions office. Those 2 years really sort of set me on a different career path.
Wow.
And then joy pushed me to go back to graduate school. Because I was like, how do I do this? She's like, why don't you go to graduate school? So throughout a bunch of places, I got into Tennessee Tech and Radford. And Tennessee Tech gave me a graduate assistantship. And so I went to Cookeville, got a master's in educational psychology and school counseling. And then Knox County Schools offered me a job. When I finished, contract offered me $27,000 a year. I still have that contract in a box in my basement, 1993.
Oh, my goodness.
And so I got into counseling. That's how I got into public education.
Yeah.
And haven't regretted a day of it since.
Wow.
And I'm finishing year 29. Haven't regretted one day
of it. I can't believe you've been out of school 29 years. That can't be right. Are you sure you're doing the math?
Well, yeah, I wasn't the best math student. Let's get that straight. But it's been more than 30 years.
Got it. All right. I want to remind everyone, we're speaking today with Dr. Major Warner, who is the superintendent of the Fauquier County Public Schools. And it was on campus today, March 21, to receive an alumni award. And he's been speaking to students, too, which has been the joy of my day, was to see you interacting with students. That was so great to see. It was sweet because, you have been out of school for more than 10 minutes, and they probably thought you were the old man of the North. I will never think that about you, just so you know.
I even said that to them. I was like, I know I'm the old one here. I'm the old guy. You know, I know that. Like, you got to honor, you got to just accept it now when you walk into the room.
I know, it's just hard.
Let me just acknowledge this so we can get it out of the way.
Well, that's why I'm here for you, Major. I'll always be older, and I will never think of you in that regard. Never. But I know how the students are. I mean, you know, you rattled off some date today, and I was like, yeah, they weren't even born yet.
Yeah, and then you got to tell them, I know y'all weren't born then.
Yeah.
You know, it's okay.
It's painful.
It is painful.
Yeah.
But then once you accept it, right, you like, okay, I can help these folks on their journey.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, they were bright-eyed. I can see their passion for education. Like, and I actually, one of the students said, you know, if you're in an interview with somebody and how can you tell if you know, they're really not passionate about what they want to do?
That's a good question.
I said, well, you got to call it out. I said, because the single biggest decision I make is who we put in front of kids, whether it's as a principal or as a teacher. And so if you get in an interview and somebody isn't responding to a question that is professional in the way that you want it to be done, that would just kind of make you, you know, stop and take pause, I said, you have to challenge them on that, because you're making a decision to put an adult in front of kids who you entrust will shape the lives of those kids. And I said, so I got that from Coach Johnson. You don't let conflict simmer. You don't, as I said to the kids, you don't let stupidity cross your face without saying something about it.
Oh, that's interesting.
And so when you have to be courageous enough to say, when you see something that doesn't feel like it's going to be helpful to children, and you can do it tactfully. There's a whole bunch of ways to do it.
Yeah.
But they asked some great questions. It really, a wonderful conversation broke out this morning around some questions, but I saw their passion for the craft, and I wanted to honor that, because I can tell when people are serious about it or not, and you can't fake your way. I mean, we joked at the beginning about, you know, public speaking, all kinds of things, but the truth is, when you're connected to your work, and you're connected to your work just as passionately as I'm connected to mine, you can't fake your way through that.
Right.
And that's true for teaching, because kids will tease out your flaws.
Yeah.
Intentionally and otherwise, they will bring out every weakness you got, and they will unintentionally break you down. And so my advice to them was that, you know, it's okay to cry, you know, you got to reflect, you know, you got to self care, you got to practice self care, because it's hard, and it's now politically hard.
Yeah. Well, and I'm not going to ask you to answer the why of what I'm getting ready to ask you, but I am going to say, I'm going to ask you to help us work through how do we get past it. Education is a little bit up against the ropes, it seems like.
It
and,
is.
You know, you hear how many articles have you read recently that, you know, people are not valuing education the way they used to, whether it's higher ed or whatever. Teachers don't feel appreciated, and they get second-guessed a lot, you know. And, you know, we all go, you know, when I was growing up, that mama always took the teacher's word over mine. So it's a different environment for educators now. How do we move past that?
I'm a believer that time will allow it. Pre-COVID, the undercurrent was there. But we, you know, nobody was fighting for the soul of public education, right, pre-COVID. You know, it was the place where kids went. There was a little bit more trust that what we were doing for kids and with kids was there and was organic and people didn't question it. But that thing was always sort of there. COVID then just kind of pulled all the covers back, right? And it brought schools and community closer together, and then it became a fight about what I call the soul of education, kids and schools and rights and all kinds of things, right? So here we are as leaders trying to depoliticize it, but at the end of the day, we're caught in the middle of this real big thing that we didn't create. I believe that 5 to 10 years from now, whatever that was, and it was, you know, is in the rearview mirror. And I said to the kids, there are places where education is still tremendously valued. I see positive signs that we are trending back in the right direction.
Oh, good.
However, we have to accept that we're going to have to lead differently and we're going to have to teach differently. Parents, and I'm a parent supporter, a parent advocate, and I'm a believer in parent voice. I believe there's a space in the room for everybody, right, to be a part of the solution. But we're going to have to navigate the new expectation of involvement.
Say more about that. Whose expectation for whose involvement?
I think increased parental and community expectation about parent involvement in education, whether it's political or otherwise. I think when you get into teaching now, you can't get into teaching now thinking this is my classroom, these are my kids, and I'll have to answer to anybody else. That's in my mind forever gone.
Yeah.
Those who are most successful find very creative ways to be communicative, to get parents involved in the process, while still maintaining this is, but I at the end of the day, I'm the teacher.
Right.
Which means you've got to have thicker skin.
Hmm.
And so Sandy asked this morning, you know, about, you know, sort of what advice. And I said, you know, you have to come into this experience now. It would be important to get kids into the student-teacher experience, get them into the building earlier and earlier and earlier, because the more time they have to practice their craft, to hone their communication strategies with parents, to work through the mistakes, we then just put them in their classrooms and they're more equipped to tackle it.
Yeah.
But I think it's forever changed.
Yeah. It feels like there's a lot that it's really hard to prepare for.
There is a lot that's hard to prepare for. It is still the most valuable profession, in my opinion. It's the most impactful profession. But it's not, you know, if your parents were teachers, it's not your parents' profession anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Riddle me this. Do you think schools are being asked to do more than they should be required to do? And I say that because I'm seeing... Golly, Ned, I'm seeing programs where, you know, schools are having to, like, feed kids, clothe kids, special ed programs that are up against it all the time, dealing with stuff that is way beyond just, you know, a learning disability. And so are we asking too much of the schools?
We've always asked too much of schools. Now it's just part of the requirement and expectation.
Hmm.
Schools have always had to be the stopgap when families were in dysfunction.
Right.
Right. Disasters happen. Schools are shelters.
Right.
So public education has always been the great equalizer. Beyond just being educated, the whole process, like if you're from poverty, right, we feed you breakfast. We feed you lunch. We'll feed you after school if we keep you for tutoring. And so public education has always been asked to do more. Now it's become the expectation that you do more. So, you know, having the ability to just think about to make the choice to do something versus now, post-COVID, those things have really taken root. So that's a complicated question. It's got a complicated answer. But the truth of the matter is you can't not do it. 32-33% of our kids are free and reduced lunch.
Wow.
So they meet the parameters. That's in my district. You know, a third of your kids fall into a socioeconomic category where they need support.
Right.
That's somebody's fault. Although some would argue, you know, I won't get into that, but we have to meet the need. So we've always had to meet
the
need.
Right.
But no, I think we get asked to do too much, but I think that's what great educators do. I said to the kids this morning, what separates good teachers from great teachers are the extra things that you're willing to do.
Oh.
And but that's because it's going to show up. A kid's going to show up hungry. A kid's going to show up with mom and dad divorcing. A kid's going to show up having lost an older sibling to suicide. A kid's going to show up because drugs are in the house. Mom's in jail. Dad's. A kid's going to show up with that story.
Right.
You got to deal with that story.
Right.
You can't ignore that story as a teacher, because they're sitting in your classroom with all their stuff in tow, and yet you want to teach them content. So you've got to handle that.
You got to get past a lot of life
Absolutely.
To really get that.
You don't have to solve
there.
Their problems, but you have to be an outlet for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, that was Betty Putnam right out of the gate. I knew I didn't have anything. I knew when I got to school that I was different. Right? I knew, you know, my circumstances were different than most kids. And so then you got this lady who's going, hey, I don't see you as any different than anybody else. And you're going to be somebody special. So you got to deal with people's stuff. That's hard. So we're absolutely being asked to do too much. But what do we do? What's the alternative?
Dude, I so want to meet Betty Putnam. That is just touching my heart. All right. Well, if you had to give just one little wrap up bit of advice to educators coming along, like the kids who are graduating now, entering the school system, you've given such good advice. I shouldn't even ask you this, but if you had sort of a one or two things that you would just say, here's what you got to hold on to make sure that you're doing a good job and that you're not going crazy.
Well, you mentioned the why. We talk a lot about our why.
Yeah.
And why do we do what we do? You absolutely have to be connected to why it is that you want to do this work. To have success and to have longevity, you have to be passionate about what you're about to do, because you can't fake your way through it. So really be connected to, am I called to this? Self-examination, self-reflection, ask yourself the tough questions, because it's the most important work that we can do. So I ask kids all the time when we interview them, you know, about their why. Why do you want to do this? And if we hear something that doesn't feel connected, we have a conversation about that. So that would be the first thing I would say to them, is to make sure that you are connected to why you want to do the work. I think the second biggest thing is to be balanced. You got to have a work-life balance. You're going to pour your heart and soul into your kids, into your planning, and to all those things. But if you don't practice self-care, if you don't take care of you, if you don't do that inner work,
mm-hmm.
you're no good to anybody. You're no good to your kids. You're no good to yourself. You're no good to whoever. So you got to be on solid ground internally, and you got to be connected externally to why this work is important. If you get those two things in harmony, you'll have a long, prosperous career, and you'll never want to do anything else a day in your life.
That is a beautiful thing. And can we just call you up and listen to you talk for a while? Because
I'll talk to you anytime.
I want to thank Major Warner for being our guest today on the Duck Pond Wall. Thanks for being in
here
today.
Thanks for letting me hang out on the Duck Pond Wall with you.
What a sweet day. And I want to thank everybody for listening today to the Duck Pond Wall. Please stay tuned to WEHC-FM 90.7. This is the voice of Southwest Virginia.